Chapter 24 of Divorce and Marriage, Section 1. Marriage is to be between one man and one woman. Neither is it lawful for any man to have more than one wife, nor for any woman to have more than one husband at the same time. Section 2. Marriage was ordained for the mutual help of husband and wife, for the increase of mankind with a legitimate issue, and of the church with an holy seed, and for preventing of uncleanness. Section 3. It is lawful for all sorts of people to marry who are able with judgment to give their consent. Yet it is the duty of Christians to marry only in the Lord, and therefore such as profess the true Reformed religion should not marry with infidels, papists, or other idolaters. Neither should such as are godly be unequally yoked by marrying with such as are notoriously wicked in their life or maintain damnable heresies. The forms used in wedding ceremonies usually state that marriage is an honorable estate, instituted by God in the time of man's innocency, which estate Christ adorned with his first miracle and is commended by the Apostle Paul. In the case of Adam and Eve, it is obvious that marriage was instituted between one man and one woman. Deuteronomy 17:17 gives the command, "Neither shall he, a coming king, and by implication all his people, multiply wives to himself." 1 Timothy 3:2-12 requires a bishop or pastor and a deacon to be the husband of one wife. In Old Testament times, the prohibition of polygamy was not well obeyed. In Old and New Testament times, divorce has been an evil that in effect results in polygamy as defined in Scripture. Instruction on marriage should begin with the most general, most normal, and least complicated circumstances. The confession states that it is lawful or right for all sorts of people to marry who are able with judgment to give their consent. This applies to the heathen as well as to Christians, for marriage is not a Christian sacrament. The second instruction deals with Christians. They should marry only in the Lord, that is, a Christian should not marry a heathen. Therefore, anyone who professes the true Reformed religion should not marry an infidel, a papist, or any other type of idolater. Mixed marriages between Protestants and papists, in which the Roman Church requires the Protestant party to bring up the children as Romanists, are a recurring source of misery to the Protestants. Sometimes, even in the United States, these iniquitous vows, after the couple has separated, are enforced by the civil courts, despite the American principle of the separation of state from church. Parents and ministers should do their best to impress teenagers with the scriptural principles before they get interested in the wrong sweetheart. In courtship, as in various other activities, there are so many ways in which a young person can ruin his life before he is aware of what he's getting into. This advice to parents must also be taught to the young people, too, for they will soon be parents, and as one of the purposes of marriage is to provide the church with a holy seed, those contemplating or entering upon marriage must be given the scriptural injunction to bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Juvenile delinquency starts with careless parents. Section 4. Marriage ought not to be within the decrees of consanguinity or affinity forbidden in the Word, nor can such incestuous marriages ever be made lawful by any law of man or consent of parties, so as those persons may live together as man and wife. The man may not marry any of his wife's kindred nearer in blood than he may of his own, nor the woman of her husband's kindred nearer in blood than of her own. Section 5. Adultery or fornication committed after a contract, being detected before marriage, giveth just occasion to the innocent party to dissolve that contract. In the case of adultery after marriage, it is lawful for the innocent party to sue out a divorce, and after the divorce to marry another, as if the offending party were dead. Section 6. Although the corruption of man be such as is apt to study arguments unduly to put asunder those whom God hath joined together in marriage, yet nothing but adultery or such willful desertion as can in no way be remedied by the church or civil magistrate is cause sufficient of dissolving the bond of marriage, wherein a public and orderly course of proceeding is to be observed, and the persons concerned in it not left to their own wills and discretion in their own case. Fortunately, in our society, incest, that is, marriage or sexual relations, within the prohibited degrees of consanguinity, causes us very little doubt. The sin may indeed occur, but it is not a national scandal. The confession, as quoted, says that after one spouse dies, the man may not marry any of his wife's kindred nearer in blood than he may of his own, nor the woman similarly. The statement is based on Leviticus 20, 19 through 21. It is quite likely, however, that the scriptural passage does not refer to a second marriage, but to fornication or adultery while the couple are both living. Leviticus 18:18 does indeed speak of a man marrying his wife's sister, but it explicitly places this marriage within the lifetime of the wife. If incest is not a national scandal, divorce is. It was so also among the Jews. The Pharisees tempted Christ by asking him whether it was lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any trivial reason. Some of the Jewish teachers approved of divorce on the grounds that the wife had burnt the dinner. The school of Hillel allowed divorce on any ground at all, even on the ground that the man had found a younger and more beautiful girl. C.F. Strack and Billerbeck, Commentar Tzum, New Testament, Aus Talmud and Midrash, in Matthew 5:32. A recent governor of the state of New York seems to have agreed with Hillel. But Jesus Christ, both in Matthew 5:32 and 19:9, insists that whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her who is put away doth commit adultery. Divorce is a national scandal. Yet in reaction to the widespread immorality in this country, one should not conclude that divorce is never permissible. The Romanists prohibit divorce, and they sometimes quote the verse, "Whom God has joined together, let no man put asunder." This is a good verse, and we wish Romanists would use Scripture on other occasion also, instead of relying on tradition and papal decrees. But the Roman interpretation of the verse is misplaced. The person who breaks a marriage is not the judge who grants the divorce, nor the innocent party who sought it. The person who has torn the marriage asunder is the party who has committed adultery. Furthermore, the Roman Church has been quite liberal in granting annulments. What made Henry VIII so angry was the Pope's refusal to grant him an annulment when so many others were favored. In fact, Henry had a better case than most, because his first marriage had itself been based on a papal dispensation from the law. The Anglican Church also prohibits divorce. Some years back, the sister of the Queen, if we may believe all the attendant publicity, took under consideration a marriage with a certain Captain Townsend. He had earlier divorced his wife for adultery. There was no doubt of his wife's guilt. Indeed, she was so unfit for decent society that the court awarded the children not to their mother, but to the captain. The adulterous wife later married the correspondent. But whether from religious scruples or pressure by the archbishop, the princess finally decided against the marriage. The evidence made public indicates that this decision was most reluctant and painful. If so, the tragedy of it could have been avoided had the young lady been a conscientious member of the Free Church of Scotland. Much as one may regret such unnecessary tragedies, the scandal of our land still remains the laxity and frequency of divorce. For some strange reason, public sentiment objects to the polygamy of old-fashioned Mormonism, and recently arrests have been made in the inaccessible counties of southern Utah, while at the same time the success of polygamy and brazen immorality of the movie people is very often accepted as a desirable ideal. Laxity affects the churches also. It is not only the pagan public who accept easy divorce. A professor in a seminary complained to me that the traditional attitude toward the remarriage of divorced persons was inhuman. The distinction between a guilty party and an innocent party was unreal, for he claimed in a divorce both persons are guilty. Therefore, both parties should be permitted to marry again. Of course, he did not maintain that both parties, because guilty, should be forbidden to marry again. In reply, I took him literally and remarked that it is not true that both parties are always guilty of adultery. He admitted this, said it was not what he meant. But in any case, it was legalistic to prohibit one party from marrying again while allowing the privilege to the other party. In keeping with the laxity of the age, the Southern Presbyterian Church has recently approved remarriage for the guilty party. This church voted that the decision of a minister whether or not to marry an adulterer should depend not on what he had done, but on what the person by God's grace has now become, and what with God's help he or she honestly intends and hopes to do in the future. This position is remarkable on several counts. First of all, it shows contempt of Scripture and of Christ himself, who gave the opposite command. Second, it shows that the ministers who voted for this alteration in the government of the church have great faith in themselves. They claim to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart. They say they can see what God's grace has done for the adulterer in question and can reliably predict the success of the second marriage. Now, Matthew 5:32 says explicitly that anyone who contracts marriage with a person divorced for fornication is guilty of adultery. Matthew 19:9 says that anyone who divorces his wife except for fornication and marries again commits adultery. Hence, the second marriage of the guilty party is sin, and the second marriage of a man who, though he is not guilty of adultery himself, has yet divorced his wife without proper cause, is also sin. It follows, therefore, that the Southern Presbyterian Church now approves of adultery and makes itself an accessory before the fact.